Hi, everybody. Welcome to Vulnerable. It's my podcast. It's also being filmed for my YouTube channel. So there's that. I'm very excited about my first guest. He is an amazing human being. It's Will Friedle. He is Eric Matthews. He is Ron Stoppable. He is Batman. He is many things, but he's also a really great guy. So today we're going to get into it and chat with him about himself. I'm Christy Carlson Romano, and this is the Vulnerable Podcast.
Who are we here with, honey?
Finally, here with Will. Will, what does the word vulnerable mean to you? Like, are you triggered by it?
No, not at all. I think vulnerable means being open and honest, and I think it just means giving yourself to another person. I think it's opening yourself up to pain and being okay with that.
That is a lot to unpack.
Someone once told me the best state of being is if like you imagine like having an ebb and flow to your ego.
Yeah.
Like you're closed off, too guarded, open, not good, but this is the way your ego should be. And I feel like that's sort of what vulnerability is,
okay.
Right?
Well, that's like the way you're doing it. It's like a pumping heart.
Yeah, you just, yeah.
So oh, there you that's go. So like, poetic.
You know, blah, 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 that guy. Well, she's cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I get that.
I've always really appreciated about Will in the time I've known him is how he's balanced his vulnerability with humor and in a way that's really made people feel like they can access that part of themselves in a safe way.
I hope so.
Like, we'll do panels together because we're Kim Possible, Ron Stoppable duo. Like, hey. Ooh, coming to a con near you for duo photo ops.
And we'll, by the way, be announcing something really fun at the end of this podcast.
Yes, I didn't know that. We will. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we will.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is cool.
Well, and also, you are open about your anxiety.
Oh, yeah. And you have to be.
Right. And that's
well, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, you say that you have to be. I remember when we first started doing cons, I don't think anxiety was as much a part of our panel discussions. And then it kind of has come up. And then I've actually noticed people ask you questions about it, like from our panels, so that they know they can come to you. So you've become sort of like this, you know, this advocate for that.
Yeah, you kind of have to be. Well, I mean, people, anybody who deals with anxiety, I always tell people there's three things I've done in my life that have helped me with anxiety more than anything else. And the first two, everybody are like, oh, yeah, I can totally do that. And I get to the third one, and they go, I'm not going to do that one. So the first one,
I think I know what it is.
Yeah, the first one is very easy. And that's why I talk about it, because it's talking about it. It's just if you hold it in and you don't express what you're dealing with, then you feel like you're alone. We're in Los Angeles, but this happens everywhere, especially nowadays with the pandemic and everything we're going through. If you're sitting at a table with 10 people and you say, I deal with anxiety, at least 5 other people go, so do I.
Yeah.
A lot of people deal with anxiety. So
why do you think that is?
I think there's a lot of different reasons for it. I think the way that we're, I mean, in my case, it was a combination of things. I mean, it was, I know that there's people in my family that have dealt with it. So there's the hereditary side, which is important. Genetics obviously play a part in any sort of mental health.
Okay.
Then at the time, I was on a popular television show. I was doing movies. I had just broken up with my girlfriend. And so my first panic attack hit me at the height of kind of everything that was happening. It's weird because it was actually filmed. It was in a movie called AG Double Hockey Sticks. And I can look at the scene because they used the take and go, first panic attack.
Oh, whoa. Shoot. I can actually see
when it happened, which is kind of interesting. But talking about it is the first thing you need to do. You know, they say you're like the proverbial duck when you deal with anxiety, where on the surface you're calm and cool, and then underneath the water your legs are going like this. So if you say to people, and you don't have to sit there and say, everybody be quiet, I'm dealing with a panic attack, you just say, I deal with some anxiety and I'm a little anxious right now, but I'm fine or working through it. Or people know you deal with anxiety, then it's just not a thing. There should be no real stigma around it anymore.
Now I don't want to interrupt you because I know you're on the track. So the second thing. Good. Thank you for telling me.
That's the other thing.
I see your legs under the table.
Exactly.
They're just
but
fluttering.
I'm so gullible anytime Will or even my husband, Brennan, my husband, Brennan.
She refers to me all the time as my husband while I'm sitting here. Well, even to her family. She'll just be like, my husband.
You do that too. You say my wife.
I say my wife. But you know that actually gullibility is also hereditary.
Is it really?
No.
Oh, God damn it.
See what you just did?
Zing.
God damn it.
Zang.
See what I deal
Wait,
with?
Wait, I want to hear the three things. What were you going to ask?
I don't know now.
Okay, what's the second thing?
The second,
which is hugely important as well, as diet and exercise. You've got to take care of your body mentally and physically. They say that doing 20 minutes of exercise a day is the equivalent in a week of taking a Prozac. you are hugely doing yourself a disservice if you deal with any sort of mental health issues and you are not exercising.
Brennan likes to take walks.
Walks are great. Yeah. Running is great. Runs. Any kind of cardiovascular is hugely important. The diet you have is hugely important. That's one of the things I have dealt with most in my life is yo-yoing weight, and I will go up as much as 60 pounds. So you guys have known me. I've been big at times in my life, and it's really affected my mental health.
I wouldn't say big. I would say husky.
Okay, you can say husky, but when you're 5'9" and 212, 214 pounds, you're big.
All right.
My wife says the same thing. Well, I didn't notice it, and it's very sweet that she says that, but I was big. I mean, I'm about 165 now, and 165 and 215 is a very big difference.
This is a great weight for you. I think you have the kind of frame where if you were bigger, you could still enjoy that.
And that's
whatever,
fine, but
you know?
And again, it has nothing whatsoever to do with aesthetics at all.
It's but it helps
all
you here.
But it's also about just cardiovascular health and your mental health. And
it's all connected.
Making sure you're out there getting enough vitamin D, getting enough oxygen. These are all things that are hugely important when you're dealing with anxiety.
So let's actually, that is
Wait,
kind of.
Got to hear the third. Sorry, honey.
I know what it is. It's social media.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The first two things people go, I can do that, no problem. The third thing is get rid of all of your social media.
Yeah, I get
And which
why.
Most people go, but I can't. I need it for work. And I go, what do you do for work? And they go, I work at a bank. And I go, well, okay, you don't need your social media.
No.
You're addicted to it. You need it like an alcoholic needs a drink. But you don't need your social media. You just want your social media. That's a completely different thing.
Outside of people like us who actually do sponsored content.
Sure.
Which is then becomes literally our job to generate stuff. But even Brendan's been struggling with the idea of putting, and I say Brendan because I'm just full blown.
Addicted.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't even know if there's a
word.
No,
sure is. No, that's the word. That's the word you need to use.
We've been talking about it and trying to curb it. Right? But it is an addiction.
Bad as heroin or alcohol? It's bad in different ways. Of course, it's not going to hit you the same way that is.
Right.
But when your life is about one specific thing, then you've got a problem.
Look, I will totally and absolutely unpack this whole social media, and I will take the hit on being addicted to social media. I'm okay with it because I understand why I'm addicted to it. I'm also a sober person.
Right.
So a sober person who's utilizing or overusing something, rather than cigarettes or something that you see people smoke out of AA offices and stuff like that.
Sure.
Anyway, I do know exactly why I'm using it and why I'm activated to use it as a parent and as an overtired mom. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about it. It's frustrating for you sometimes, I think.
Well, it's
in the
because
times
there's
where he wants to connect.
Two things. One, I will just want to make this comment. You gave me one of the greatest little exercises to help me with my anxiety. I don't know if you remember this. You told me.
Was it
countdown
100? Oh, the back from 100. Yeah.
Yeah. And
what is it clearly?
So if you have an anxiety attack, one of the things that you want to do is you want to trigger a different part of your brain. So one of the things you can do is if your anxiety kicks in, you feel yourself having an attack, you start to count down from 100 to 0 by threes.
Yep.
And you've used it since
I use
told
it all
you
the
that.
Time.
Oh, are, it's you, great. Are you having anxiety attacks? All
I have
time?
Them. I have them, yeah. But I'm pretty good at managing them.
That's
pretty
me too good at now. Them. But it takes it like anything else, you've got to exercise it. You've got to figure out how to do it.
For me, they're really triggered because I have, some stomach stuff
that
I deal with, right?
Do you?
So when Crohn's. That happens and I start to feel it coming on, that's when the anxiety hits too.
Sure.
I'm like, oh no, now that oh sure. great, now
and
this.
And then you start to some people call it snowballing, other people call it funneling. It's one of those things where I call it spiraling, where all of a sudden one small thought in your brain becomes 10 small thoughts in your brain, becomes one giant thought in your brain, becomes a giant thing in your brain. And then all of a sudden that's all that you're thinking about. And that's all it's about. And then the hands get clammy. You're short of breath. Your vision gets blurry.
You feel like you're dying.
An anxiety attack, and you taste copper, and your heart starts to go. I mean, it's very common.
Did I have an anxiety attack the other day? Was that what that was? Or was I just super tired? Do you remember when I had to lay down and you were helping
were you
with
dizzy?
The kids? I was very dizzy, actually. I felt like I had a vertigo feeling.
Vertigo
and then
feeling.
I was
were you hypervigilant when it came to feeling your body? Like you could feel the tips of your fingers, you could feel your toes, you could feel.
No.
Okay.
Okay.
No, that's I think another, I was just dizzy and exhausted.
I mean, fatigue can, they say, what is it, a day and a half without sleep? Or a day without sleep is the equivalent of driving drunk.
It was pretty, yeah. Well,
I don't know the exact hours.
I'm sleep training my little one. And so, I have variations of fatigue. But
well,
times.
That's the other thing you need to find out when you deal with anxiety is what you're triggers are. And for me, lack of sleep is one of mine.
Yeah.
So that's something that can really trigger people.
That's his too. Actually, that's why Brendan doesn't do nights with me.
I have to get enough sleep.
Brendan has slept in another bedroom.
No, that happens. I mean, a lot of couples do that occasionally. Yeah. It depends on if somebody snores or if somebody rolls over, if somebody wants to cuddle, if somebody elbows. Yeah. My parents have slept in separate beds for 30 years. They say it's the thing that's kept them together.
That's true. It's true. Yeah. It's,
sometimes I'll have to do that. But
we're trying to get back in
the same room. Has to do with the little one, because the little one will come in and then she's, you know.
But you've already made the mistake of having children, and there's nothing you can do about that.
Well, and then I had children that resemble the Hulk, and they just want to like punch you for no reason in the middle of the night.
Yeah, my
okay, the Hulk always punched for a reason. Okay, we're not going to get into that right now. It's a whole different podcast.
So, you know what? You're right.
It is a whole different podcast.
Don't put that on the Hulk.
I'm sorry.
Okay, don't put that on the Hulk.
So social media got it. Okay, which I we can talk unpack about, though. Again and again.
Okay.
We should, though, just briefly, the social media thing.
Okay.
You know how much anxiety and self-loathing comes with social media, especially when you're younger nowadays and you're watching these things on Instagram where you think everybody has a better life than you. You're never going to be thin enough. You're never going to be good enough. You're never going to have enough stuff. It's horrible for
younger
people to be looking
at this stuff. Well, then there's filters, which filters are interesting too, because like I use filters, admittedly, and I love them as a quote unquote creator. Because as a creator, you're like, well, I was, you know, I broke out that day, or like, it's that fix it in post.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So it's like, okay, I'll just fix it in post. So for me, I know that I can look one way and I'm not imposter syndroming my entire life identity, right?
Right.
So for me, it's just an industry standard of the filters are a part of the Photoshop concept. But I know that there is a backlash now about any kind of filtering because people want to embrace the authenticity of things. Sure. And like, I get that too.
I got a comment on backlash though.
Yeah.
Because that's also a huge part of social media that I find to be dangerous.
And anxiety inducing,
Right. You can or cannot do a thing, right? And like policing of everyone via social media and canceling and deplatforming and re-canceling. And that also is incredibly anxiety inducing.
Of course.
Like,
of course
if you're like, hey, I just have a random thought.
That is authentic. That is authentic.
But you also have to, you're trying to get a whole bunch of people you will never, and that's the other thing. There's no reason whatsoever to have the number of followers put out there. Who cares?
Right.
Only,
that's accurate.
The
that's
only
true.
Reason that you have that number out there is so that you can feel better than other people. Because at the end of the day, does it matter what that number is? Would your social media be any different if there wasn't that number down there at the bottom?
Of course,
it doesn't need to be
displayed. That doesn't even have to do with the algorithm.
Of course not.
It is or the ads serve to you.
So some poor kid can look down at their phone and say, I have 400 followers and the person sitting next to me has 900 followers. Why am I such a bad person?
We can really get into this.
Yes, it's
because if part of the goal is to aspire to get followers, what ends up happening is you'll see algorithmically what performs well, right?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I got a certain amount of followers from this. I really don't like making that content. But if I make that content, then I'll probably get more followers because I noticed it the last time. Oh, it worked again. Now all of a sudden you start making this content you don't want to make. And now you are a product of the content you make and you become the thing you never wanted to be.
But also look at branding. Look at just the word. You're trying to get followers.
Right.
It's so off-putting to me.
It's almost cultish.
Your goal is to get as many followers
by the way, please follow us on all our social media.
No, but it's true. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, hindsight being what it is, I think history will look back at social media and it will not look back kindly. There have been times, don't get me wrong, there have been times that things have happened where social media is a wonderful platform for people. Like anything else, it got corrupted very quickly. And it is a wonderful place to bully. It is a wonderful place to hate openly. It is a wonderful place to demean people. It's just this kind of a cesspool that I didn't want to be in anymore.
I think the biggest issue too, if you think about it, just sort of how we've developed, you know, evolutionarily, like people are by nature tribal.
Sure.
And so if you connect that many people and share information with that many people at a given time.
Sure.
Like you can only expect people to go into their camps and like dig deeper into their belief systems. So it naturally is going to create animosity.
Sure.
Right? So like I think the only issue is the genie's out of the bottle now. So
that's the thing. That to me is just an excuse for people to not delete their social media.
Oh, well, that's not what I mean.
Actually, your brother, we've run the gamut of age range, right? So your brother's 27.
28.
Okay. Yeah. And he's been off social media since he was like 25.
No, he got off social media his senior year of high school.
Oh, really? It's that early?
It's been 10 years.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. So, and in 10 years, social media has really become like out of control.
He is like, will not do it. He knew. He saw the signs.
Smart.
And they opened up his eyes.
Smart.
but
you don't ever get a good Ace of Base reference anymore. You really don't.
Any chance
I'm sorry.
You can. You should try to slide it in.
Follow Ace of Base on all social media.
Please don't. I hate Ace of Base. They're the worst and they are so triggering to me. When I hear them, I feel like I'm getting a root canal.
It's a great song.
I literally dry heave when I hear that.
My brothers used to make fun of me so badly because I had that I saw the sign Ace of Base single.
Yeah.
And it was a great song.
It was like neon green and black.
Ace of Base that like they used to get. I mean, talk about triggering. Yeah, that was.
I just feel like it sounds like the woman who's singing, in all respect to her and her technique, good for her, but like it sounds like she's like throwing up or she's gagging. Okay.
First of all,
oh, that she won't.
This just shows me how little you know because it's two women in Ace of Base. It's not one woman.
Wait,
it's
so
two
that
women
makes sense.
Two
it's
guys.
Two. Well, they're all singing at once because it sounds like an inhuman person singing.
You can also sing at one time and it sounds like one person. The Bee Gees, that voice that you hear in the Bee Gees is actually
like
two of them together.
Yeah, I get that though. So I get that. Please,
I mean, it's
no
three that sing all the time, but one
see
that you think it's two.
You corrupted this conversation.
Hold on,
sorry.
I get off on tangents.
Speaking of brothers, and we'll get back to the social media thing. I want to know, I know and she knows, we know everything about you. Okay?
I know.
That's absolutely not true.
But all these wonderful listeners and viewers out there, make sure you follow, subscribe, like I want to know, family, let's start. How did Will Friedle first walk into New York and get going?
Well, I didn't walk. I took a bus.
Oh,
and that's a whole other story.
I
was born in Hartford, Connecticut. I'm a Connecticut boy.
Oh, Hartford. I didn't know that.
I was born in Hartford in the wonderful year 1976, the American bicentennial year. Yeah, and I knew I wanted to be an actor from the time I was about 5 years old. We used to have free day at our school, and the free day when it was like first or second grade, you got to do whatever you want. I always put on a play. It was always Stone Soup. I don't know if you remember that.
Love Stone Soup.
Exactly.
It's a great play.
So great play. Stone Soup is about these soldiers that come into this village and they have no food. So they go and they ask the villagers if they can have food. They all say no. So they go to the big pot in the center of town and they put stones in and they put water in and they boil it. And they pretend to smell. Oh, it smells so good. It's so amazing. And all the locals come out going, what are you making? They go, oh, we're making stone soup. But man, it'd be better with carrots. And they go, wait, I've got carrots. And they come out. And so they get everybody, well, yeah, it's pretty good. But if it had chicken, wait a second, I've got chicken. And so it's a great play until the 38th time you've done it. by the way, I was also the writer director at age 6 years old. So it depended on the cast. I could pull in from kickball. but then we have a great stage, local stage in Connecticut called the Hartford Stage. And they did an open casting call for A Doll's House. I was 10 years old. This is 1986. It starred Mary McDonnell, David Strathairn, Mark Lamos. I mean, like the Jerry Bamman, like the cast.
You just have a reunion with the woman who played
your
mother?
I did. Well, reunion, small r. She so pretended to remember me. It was the cutest thing in the world. She was like, oh my God, you were great in that. And I was like, you don't remember me at all.
You said it.
I didn't. It was in my head. But she's wonderful, Mary McDonald. She taught me how to dance. But I went in and I got the, a casting call. I got the smallest part in the play. It was one line in the very beginning. And then like a week before we went on, they switched me with the lead kid. So he ended up having the one line in the beginning, and I ended up being on stage with her for like two or three scenes. It was really cool.
Awesome.
And then I begged my parents after that but both my parents are lawyers in Connecticut, so I did not have stage parents.
I didn't know anything.
Yeah. My mom's a lawyer and an author. My dad's a lawyer and retired Navy.
Okay.
Nobody knew anything about this industry. Nobody wanted to know anything about this industry. In my family, you went to high school, you went to college, then you became a lawyer, you became a doctor, you had some sort of profession. That's what you did. So I was begging to be an actor. My parents were like, this, we don't even know. My dad ended up getting, and you're gonna have to Google this, kids, a bunch of yellow pages from New York City from friends he had. Yellow pages were books of giant numbers.
They were tiny, but
there were lots of them.
Lots of them.
A vast number of tiny numbers.
I remember them.
We should go back to that.
Should, exactly. Yeah. And a friend of his had a camera and we took pictures in the back of his office, like against a chair, like the headshots when you're like 11 years old, and sent him down to New York City.
But they like leaned into it for you.
They supported me. But they were not like, we're going to drive you down to New York all the time.
Right.
It wasn't like you met some stage parents where it was like their job was taking their kids to auditions and making
Mom.
Was your mom a stage parent? Okay.
Yeah.
Was. So I didn't have any.
Yeah. Was.
No, she's still living in the past.
She's not really retired.
No. Wow. So no, I didn't have any of that. It was like, we love you, we support you, we'll take you when we can. But
healthy though. That's good.
And so I had pictures taken and was signed by a manager. And 6 months later, I was on my first series on Nickelodeon.
Who did they send the pictures to?
We found a bunch of names in the Yellow Pages. And my dad sent them to like 20 managers in New York City. And then I did Nickelodeon on and off from 11 to like 15. And then—
What shows?
Well, I started on a show called Don't Just Sit There.
Which was, we remember that. Don't
I
you?
Don't know
that. Oh,
it was
like, I do.
It was a young Saturday Night Live. We had a band and we had special guests.
That's so cool.
So we were interviewed. That's how I met like Will Wheaton, and we interviewed New Kids on the Block, and Alyssa Milano was there. And it was, did skits and had a band and the whole thing. And
he did like a whole hip hop.
I did.
Remember we found it?
The Kid Fresh hip hop
thing. Oh, yeah. I remember that.
The funniest thing is, it literally in this last week and a half, the entire cast has reconnected.
What?
We got not on social media. We were texting each other. Like, I had the number of some of the people. And when I went back home to Connecticut, I found this giant birthday card for my 13th birthday signed by everybody. And I took a picture of it and I sent it to the couple people that I was still connected with. And they connected everybody else. And we set up a reunion. So
but
for
not,
the first time since.
Not through social media, I find really interesting.
Through pigeon
texting. Nope.
Yeah.
Because again, I'm not on social media. I haven't been for years. So there's no. We didn't connect in
any way. That's very cool.
And so we're going to see each other in September. We're having a reunion. All of the Don't Just Sit There band.
That's
after.
So cool.
So it was 1988.
Wow.
Wow.
That we did that. So 88, 89.
Okay.
So everybody's getting together.
Nice.
For the first time in forever. Including the band. Like, everybody's going to be there.
The band too.
Yeah, everybody.
That's so cool.
Then I did like random stuff for them. They would say, hey, we're opening Universal Studios in Orlando at the time. Was opening a giant Nickelodeon thing.
Right.
So I did that rap song for that. I went and I opened this, like hosted the opening of the Slime Geyser.
Yeah.
We did all this stuff. So I still had the coolest job in the history of the world when you're 13.
Yeah. Were the Nickelodeon studios in New York like really cool?
They were amazing. But no, but when they were moving from New York to Universal, they took myself, Matt Brown, Ali Smith, and Wendy Douglas. We were the four hosts of Don't Just Sit There. And they took us, and for 6 weeks, we lived at Universal Studios before it was open.
What a dream.
And
you're 13?
I'm 13. Oh, and our whole job every day was to take a camera crew and go on all the rides over and over again. And be filmed going like, this is the best thing. And then go eat at the restaurants. We had a park. We had a theme park to ourselves for 6 weeks.
That's a dream.
So cool.
It was a dream. Everything was free. We did whatever we want. And then it rolled into we were shooting these bumpers the whole time for the 3-hour live opening of Universal Studios in Florida. So that was my job at 13. It was the sickest thing in the world.
And your parents were like, fuck it. Go.
Well, that was my parents were. So I it's so funny because I tell my wife these stories now and she's like, how did your parents let you do this?
Right.
Where they would drive me to the bus in Farmington, Connecticut. I would get on the bus. I'd drive 3 hours down in New York City. I'd get off at Port Authority at 42nd Street in New York. And this is New York in the 80s. It was not as clean as it is now. It was like
when Times Square
was like all the porn theaters and all
that
stuff.
So you never had any trepidation? Like you never
I loved it.
No anxiety, just all excitement.
No, anxiety hadn't hit me yet. Everything was excitement. I would get down there. I would walk into a room after 3 hours on the bus. They'd go, no, we were looking for someone with the red hair. I'd turn around. I'd get back on the bus. My manager would usually meet me at the bus station, but sometimes he didn't.
Yeah.
And I'd walk around the city myself. I loved it. I loved everything about it. I knew all the homeless people at Port Authority by name. I would literally get off the bus and they'd be like, come on, break a leg today, Will. I know. And I'd be like, thanks. I mean, it was such an experience. There's absolutely no education like the world.
Was there a specific food you ate? Because I remember going to all the time.
I would go to Sbarro's pizza because I was like,
I get pizza
whenever I want to. And it was like, my parents weren't there. So I was like, I'm going to go get some pizza.
You got the worst pizza.
I went all the way to New York to get like
Wait, you were how old again?
Mall in America.
Yeah.
Wait, you were how old again?
12.
Holy cow.
I bet you if you were
crazy.
To see, I don't think Sbarro exists anymore, does it?
I think it must.
If you were to walk into Sbarro, I wonder if you just get like slammed with memory. Just that
That olfactory kind of taking you by to that pizza.
Because I grew up going to and from Connecticut as well, like him. And whenever I go to Grand Central, I still have this like, I look up and I'm like, there's the sky, the wonderment of the...
But you had Grand Central. He had fucking Port Authority.
Port Authority. Yeah, it was slightly different. And
the
I had a bus
terminal at Port Authority.
I had a bus ride.
And the guy on the corner.
There was a wonderful bus driver named Pete. I wish I remembered the man's last name. My father and I just tried looking it up when I was home. It was the Bonanza bus line, which doesn't even exist anymore. It's now Peter Pan. Mm. But his name was Pete, and he was an older man who would constantly look after me when I was on the bus. He wouldn't let anybody else sit next to me. And he would get on the mic like, get away from the kid.
Yeah.
If there was anybody that would try to sit next to me, he was the coolest. He was just the coolest.
So you just had like, you. I mean, to be honest, you got very lucky.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. Yeah, I consider my entire life luck, and I knock wood as I say it every time.
We wouldn't recommend that necessarily kids go and do this.
Well, I think CPS would probably be involved if a 12-year-old child was walking around alone. Let's not
put his parents under the bus here.
Again, no.
It was a different
time. But I also had adults with me 9% of the time. Okay. I did. My manager was always there, like waiting as I got off.
Right. And he'd walk me
to
the thing.
No, do you still talk to that manager?
No, I haven't for years. Okay. I haven't for years.
So you're on, they're doing all the Nickelodeon stuff.
Yeah.
Fucking lounging in Orlando.
Yeah.
Like as a 13-year-old.
Wow. Yeah. With our own apartments and everything.
And you're sliming people.
Do you remember Double Dare?
Oh, yes. Mark Summers, baby.
Do you remember Robin from Double Dare who brought everything out? She was my legal guardian for the 6 weeks that I lived in.
What? That's crazy.
I've had an interesting life. As Jonah Hex used to say, I've led an interesting life.
That would have been my dream.
So it was very, very cool. And then I got an audition came, like you get, like we get 1,000 of them. An audition came for something called the Untitled Ben Savage Project. And they wanted me to come for the older brother. And I was in New York.
You were how old?
I was 16.
Okay.
And the day of the audition came and I got sick and couldn't go.
Oh,
and they cast somebody else.
What?
And they shot the pilot, the Untitled Ben Savage Project, with a different Eric Matthews.
Did not know this.
Do we know who it is?
How do we not know
this? His name was Harry
Potter.
I don't want to do the man disservice. I want to say Branshee or Branishy.
Okay.
And he was a fine actor. Nothing wrong with his acting.
You had a Back to the Future situation.
I can tell you exactly what happened with him. No, what happened was he and Ben were pretty close to the same height and they knew Ben was going to grow and they wanted it to look much more like the older brother.
Uh-huh.
And I always tell people that's the way of the world, the sliding doors thing. That kid's 5 inches taller and I'm not sitting here right now.
Whoa.
Yeah. So they called again.
Sliding doors.
Now it is called... The weirdest name in television. I look down, I go, Boy Meets World.
Yeah.
Right.
Who is ever going to watch anything called Boy Meets World? But wow, it's already been picked up for 13 episodes, so there's no chance I'm going to get this thing. But I go to New York, they put me on tape. They apparently like it. Now what happens is when you're in New York, now they fly you out to California for the screen test.
Had you ever been to California before?
I had. The year before, I had a couple times for screen tests. One, I hung out all day with Jonathan Brandis, God rest him. So then I went out again, and this is a funny story. I went out again for Michael Jacobs, who did Boy Meets World, did a show beforehand. First it was called The Torkelsons, then it was called Almost Home. And there was
an older brother on that.
Yeah, and then it spun off. They did 1 year. Of a primetime show.
Okay.
And there was like an older brother on that too. And it was between myself for that part. Right. Almost Home. Myself, Jason Marsden, who became my best friend in real life.
Right.
And Shiloh Strong, who's Ryder Strong, who played Sean on Boy Meets World's older brother.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
I then get out to audition for the older brother on Boy Meets World. And it's between myself, Jason Marsden, and Shiloh Strong.
Shit.
Oh, man. So I will never forget it. I go in and I read.
Did you feel competitive with them?
No, at the time, I'm still so... I am one of these people where every day in this industry to me where people don't realize I feel like I'm faking it is a gift.
Okay.
You're still riding high in Orlando.
Absolutely. I love it. But it's my whole life has been like that. The idea that I get to do this for a living, I get to do cartoon voices, I get to entertain people. I'm still waiting for somebody to go, you've had a great run, but now you got to go. And I'm going to take a big bow and go, thank you. This has been amazing. Good night, everybody.
But that's called it. Awesome. That is technically imposter syndrome, right?
Like, I guess I don't feel like I'm faking it, nor do I feel like I'm not talented.
We're gonna
I just
bring
feel
in a
like
licensed
I'm
therapist.
So lucky to be here that it's eventually you got to roll snake eyes because you can't keep rolling passes every time and making a ton of money.
Okay.
So I, you know, went out and I auditioned for Boy Meets World. And I didn't think I got it. And I remember my dad's there with me. And I walked out of the room and I shook my head. I just went, and he went, well, what do you want to do? Tell me what you want to do.
We're he here actually for went
the day.
With you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He said, we're here for the day. What do you want to do? And I said, you know what I saw in Hollywood? I saw the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum. Let's go there. He's like, let's go.
Aww.
So we get in the car. We drive down to Hollywood. We walk around. We have a picture taken. We go to the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum. And right before we're going to walk in, there's a phone booth right across. A phone booth, kids, was an actual phone that you put money in and could make calls.
A quarter.
And it was there.
A dime?
It was a dime in Connecticut.
A dime.
Yeah.
But there was one there, and it was there until like 10 years ago, the same phone booth. My dad goes, before we go in, call your agent in New York, tell him it didn't go well and that we're coming home. I went, all right, fine. I called. His name was Steve Carson. And I said, Steve, and he went, you got it. And I went, I got what? And he said, the show, you got it. You got it. It's yours. You got it. You got Boy Meets World.
At a fucking phone booth.
Next to Ripley's.
And I am jumping up and down. I hug my dad. I can't believe this. And then my agent essentially says, it's shooting soon. Like, you're moving to Los Angeles.
Like, you're never leaving
there. You better figure something out. You got 13 episodes, so you better figure something. So I look at my dad, and my dad's like, let's run through the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum, because that's what you wanted to do.
I love the way your parents are.
My parents have been married, I think, they're 58 years now. They're the closest people in the world to me. They're the greatest people
in the world. I really want to meet your parents.
You'll meet them in Connecticut.
Okay.
You will.
I can't wait.
That's awesome.
So they're the two coolest human beings you'll ever meet in your life. Married forever, they're the best. So my dad's like, we got to find a place for you to live. Like, they're both lawyers practicing in Connecticut. They're not moving out with me. So we got to figure something out here, because you have to move out here and we can't move with you.
You're one of how many siblings?
Three. There's three of us.
Older, younger?
I'm the youngest. Okay. Which is funny because everyone's like, you were my big brother.
I'm the youngest I'm the big sister.
And I'm the youngest. So I have two older brothers. My oldest brother's 8 years older than me. My middle brother's 5 years older than me. And then there's me.
And are they lawyers?
No. My oldest brother was a broker on Wall Street. And then he retired very young. And he and my sister-in-law bought a hotel and ran a hotel in Palm Springs, which they just sold.
That's so cool.
But they ran it for years. And then my middle brother has done a bunch of things. He was a filmmaker. He made a couple great independent films and then didn't kind of know what he wanted to do. He was writing for a while. He's the guy who, he's got a big sign that says, not all who wander are lost. Right. Where he's done every, you name the job, he's done it in some country in the world. Like,
that's
he's the student of the world. And then met his wife and settled down and now has like a regular job, but is still kind of like, they're going to hike Machu Picchu and the Incan Trail. Japan. They're like, they're that kind of people.
Got it.
The world is their office.
Got it.
So my dad and I found this place called the Oakwood Apartments.
Oh yeah.
And anyone who's never been in Los Angeles, the Oakwood Apartments at the time, it's only actors and divorced men. That's the only people that live
so
in the
Oakwood. Yeah.
And they're really fully bad, furnished kind of small apartments that everyone comes out for pilot season.
My brother came to visit me because I lived there during the touring part of some Broadway production that I was on at like 8 years old or 9 years old. And he had like the night of his life with like the Doublemint twins.
That was me. I was with the Doublemint twins. No joke.
And the guy from Free Willy.
That was me. You're telling my story.
No, I think...
Yes, you are.
Maybe you guys...
That was my first night at the Oakwood was... I've told this story to you before.
No. This was really my brother.
It can't possibly be.
Wait a minute. It might have been around the same time.
I think you were
two-time. You guys were probably...
Hanging
together.
I don't know. My first night at the Oakwood. This is a story I tell in every panel that I do.
I think the Doublemint twins double-timed
Maybe.
You.
My first night... Because I say on Wednesday night, I'm in my bedroom in Connecticut. And on Thursday night, I was at a hot tub with the Doublemint twins and the kid from Free Willy.
Wait, my brother was there then.
That's we were so literally weird. There the same night. Was this 1993?
Yeah.
Okay, then we're both talking about exactly the same night because that's my first night at the Oakwood apartment.
Oh, wow.
Yes, she was eight.
Literally my story is the Doublemint twins and
wait a minute.
No joke.
This is like, we got to transition this into some sort of parallel universe podcast.
Because this
is bizarre.
No joke. That was my first night at the Oakwoods was the kid from Free Willy and the Doublemint twins.
Holy shit.
Yeah, no joke. I've told
that
story 100 times.
That's so cool.
I cannot believe, so I must have hung out with your brother must have been there then.
Well, Tony.
Tony Romano.
Tony Romano.
Well, there you go. Must have been there with him. That's crazy.
That's cool.
Nuts. But my oldest brother's fraternity brother was moving out to California at the time, so he became my legal guardian.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, that's cool.
And he worked at Fox. And we're still great friends. He lives like a mile from me with his family.
So you lived in the Oakwoods while you shot the first season?
Yeah,
the first
like
13 episodes. Yeah, I was 16, about to turn 17. We started in July, and in August I turned 17.
Right.
And we got picked up for our back nine, and we were all excited about that. And then I was like, well, we're going to get at least a season of this thing. I found an apartment for season two because at that point I'm 18 years old. And
your dad went back after you guys started. Okay, got it.
Yeah,
okay.
And then that was it. I've been here 30 years.
And you guys
years
were
now.
Close. Like you guys, you've told me before in panels that you guys are like a real family.
Yeah,
so
very close. Yeah.
Was that right off the bat or did that kind of grow over that
oh,
first
no, that
season?
Was right off the bat. No, we're
awesome.
All, what you mean on Boy Meets World or my real family?
Boy Meets World.
Oh, yeah. No, we all clicked right away.
Yeah.
We all clicked. I mean, you know this too. Well, maybe not because it's kind of different with your cast.
Yeah.
But it was, we were young and we were all thrown into this thing together. So you get casts of Seinfeld friends, of the people that are very close, but they're adults when they get the show. It's very different than when you're on a long running series and you're kids because you're all growing up together.
It's rare. Because kids are inherently competitive.
Yeah.
Right? And they're trying to...
Well, and their parents are competitive.
Right? And you never know what kind of parental situation they have. And so they may be trying to vie for screen time or wanting other stuff.
Well, again, this is a big... You notice a huge difference now than then. We had no social media. We did not know that the person sitting next to you had 500 more followers than you did. Yep. Had 1,000 more.
Much healthier.
None of that competitive stuff.
And there also wasn't like sponsored...
No.
Like pushes for them to... What I loved about the TGIF kids was that they were accidentally becoming this like... This round of the stable of super talented young people when we were growing up that we all watched.
And people would imprint on your characters. Like at school, people would be like, I'm the so-and-so.
I'm the so-and-so.
From like Jaleel to like, there was a range of people.
And there wasn't a million shows.
No.
There was a couple of shows.
And it was all filtered through TGIF that we would all experience as Americans. We would sit down on Friday with our families.
That was the thing though, Boy Meets World was the show that adults could sit down and get one thing out of it. Kids could sit down and get one thing out of it.
Yeah.
Every time you watched it, you got something that you missed the last time. But it just kept going. We did 7 seasons.
Wow, that's
and
a lot.
We were never the big popular show ever. We weren't even, I think, featured in TV Guide until season 7. Like we just kept going, and our show didn't become really popular until we were already off the air. Second run on Disney and ABC Family, that's when it really started to take off.
That's so interesting.
So it's really weird. And now I would argue it's more popular than ever because of
social media.
Disney Plus and social media and all that kind of stuff. But it's one of those things where I would say 50% of the people I now sign autographs for or do cameos for are 15 and under.
Wow.
So there's a whole new generation of people and then Girl Meets World and all that stuff. So that all became very, very
So funny. Actually, Boy Meets World came about on Disney Channel because they were looking to populate their programming schedule and they owned your rights or whatever, right? And then
they
threw it up there, but it clicked.
Yeah.
Because of what I think you're saying is that it was timeless and that the adults could watch it. And I think the adults may have been people that watched it when they were growing up too, maybe.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, I think so. Absolutely.
So it was like, I'm going to throw this on and it's fun for me. And I guess if my kid likes it. So it's still that.
Sure.
That happens now with our stuff. Yeah. That, you know.
I don't have anything that I could watch with my kids, honestly. There's nothing that I could sit and put on and say, like today, that's being made today.
That you get something out of it and they get something out of it. Honey, you have macabre taste.
That's true.
There's got to be something. There's nothing
not
that you and your kids can enjoy together.
With our kids.
No, that's true.
No.
Do you like animation at all?
I do, depending. Okay. Speaking of animation,
musicals
by the way.
Make you nervous.
Wait.
Talk about anxiety.
I don't like musicals at all.
Yeah,
oh my God. We're the same
talk
person.
Talk about anxiety.
Yeah. We're the same person. I cannot go and watch somebody. First of all, why are you singing everything?
Thank you. And like, how does everybody, did everyone get together and just decide on the
they're
dance
gonna sing
in
today?
The middle of the street?
Thank you.
So musical theater makes you guys nervous.
Yes.
And this is what I find interesting. So Brennan hasn't even seen me perform live, really. I feel like
I've seen you perform live once.
He's avoided it. But granted.
No, I haven't avoided it.
I also haven't given you a lot of opportunities to see me live. But
yeah, get back on Broadway,
will
ya?
He gets super nervous. He's like, oh my God, somebody's going to mess up. Like, something's going to happen.
I'm a performer,
is that
dude?
What it is?
Okay. You know, I toured in a punk band and like I perform live all the time.
See, that's great.
But other people doing it. It's that plus I just hate musicals.
Yes. I like musicals if the whole thing's a musical. Like
I enjoyed Hamilton.
I'm just gonna say Hamilton.
Oh, yes. Hamilton's great. See, we can meet in the middle.
All singing.
Yes.
It's not, hey, how you doing? I'm great. How you doing? Well, you know, I can't pay my rent today. Oh, that's
terrible. I can't pay my rent.
And why is everybody dancing? What the hell?
That's it. You're right. It's the
combo.
Buying into the world.
And yet Natalie Wood in West Side Story I fell in love with Natalie Wood.
Apparently she didn't sing.
No, she did not sing. She did not sing.
Wow.
That was back in the day.
Can we take musicals? Let's go back just a step.
Okay.
And you talked about animation.
Yeah.
Because we need to get into animation. Because you moved from Boy Meets World, and you're still doing, obviously, all kinds of other stuff. Disney Channel original
He's
movies,
writing.
All kinds of stuff.
Oh, right? You mean at the time.
Yeah.
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 But, and writing. You wrote the Winnie the Pooh movie.
I did back in the day. No back credit for it, but yeah, that's mine.
We'll give you credit.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, kids, this
Can
is
you
what
pat
happens.
Me, pat me on the back. Pat me on the back.
Yes.
But your very first animated role was
Batman.
Freaking Batman.
Batman was the first animated role I ever played. Yeah, in a show called Batman Beyond. Yeah.
Okay. Can you quickly tell that story?
They were casting for Batman and they were casting and the Bruce Timm, who was the creator and just coming off the wildly popular and freaking amazing Batman the Animated Series, which changed the whole ball game for animation. His wife was a Boy Meets World fan and said, "You're casting for young Terry, young Batman. You should bring in Will Friedle." And
because of the wife.
Yeah, and that's they so did, funny. And I said, "There's no way I'm ever going to get this. It's not going to happen." I ended up getting Batman, and like a week later, sitting next to Kevin Conroy,
a legend who
took me under his wing and took me under his bat wing,
as it were,
and taught me, helped to teach me that side of the industry. Between him and Andrea Romano, they really changed my life, changed my focus, because I had not yet experienced a panic attack, and it was probably about a year or two after that I got Batman that I had my first anxiety attack, which drastically changed my course of work.
Batman led to what?
Batman led to another show. It led to an entire animation career. Let me talk about that for about 7 minutes. it led then to another show on Disney Channel called Kim Possible.
Say what?
Wait a minute. You only did Batman and then KP?
No, I did. I mean, I had some things in between, but for big shows, it went from Batman to Kim Possible.
Because the way that I saw Will was that he was this voiceover legend, as well as having done, I don't know.
You are in my own mind.
You are now.
Maybe in my own mind. But it was, but then we did Kim Possible for 3 seasons until,
four, and
no, but
four.
I was going to say, and then they canceled up. Well, not canceled us. They just Disney did the 65 and out rule.
Yeah.
And then again, pre all social media and everything, people did a write-in campaign and got us a 4th season, which is huge. I think that was the first time that it happened in Disney Channel history, was with Kim Possible.
Wow. Really?
Yeah,
before, I think Raven did it too, but
they did it. They did stuff later.
Yeah.
But
we were unprecedented.
So this,
which led, so my anxiety then, what happened was, it led me to really fall into the animation world, which has become the absolute love of my life.
And you are all over the place.
I love it. It's my favorite. It's just a wonderful form of acting, an incredible group of people that is now thankfully getting far more diverse, far more talented. I mean, it's just, and I've worked with some there's not words to describe some of the actors I've worked with on camera, how wonderfully talented they are, but some of the voiceover actors, most of the voiceover actors that I've worked with, are so unbelievably talented, you just sit there and your mouth agape.
We have something exciting. You actually, have something very exciting.
Brendan's excited for us.
I'm so excited for you guys, because we're doing something with this whole animation thing.
We are.
What is it? What are you guys going to do?
What are we doing, Christy?
Well, YouTube's been fun, but we wanted to do different things on top of still doing YouTube content. And so me and obviously my producing partner, Brendan, we called Will up because he's a good friend.
Actually, wrong. Will called us up.
Wait, I thought you called him.
No. Will called us.
Yeah,
called
you guys. Yeah. You actually did this.
He's the guy.
You did this to yourself.
Will's the guy.
Okay, I did. So Will called Brendan.
Yeah.
Okay. And what did you say?
I said, we've got to do something together when it comes to the world of animation.
Cool.
We've got to learn more about it. We've got to talk more about it. And we came up with a pretty great idea.
Yes.
What's it called?
I Hear Voices.
I Hear Voices.
Yep.
A new podcast.
Yes. Yep. Hosted by Christy and I.
Yep.
That starts this Friday.
And we are going to be interviewing the greatest talents in all of the voiceover world, talking to them about how they got into the industry, talking to them about all the characters they do. And as we get along a little further, there's going to be something that is the coolest thing in the world.
There's no podcast like it.
No, there really isn't. So what we're going to do is, it's going to be interactive, to the point where kids, adults, everybody are going to be able to call Skype in with their favorite actors and create characters, and their actors are going to actually put voices to the drawings that they've done.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really cool.
You heard it here first, folks. It's going to be big.
I hear voices.
And it's also very family friendly. I Hear Voices is geared towards everyone to enjoy. Vulnerable is a little bit more about people's, mental health journeys and sort of acceptance and all that stuff.
And we say the word
which we do not on I Hear
Voices. We do not say the word.
No.
Are you planning on using that part?
No, I'm going to beep it. It's going to be fun.
Okay, all right. I think we have to wrap. We have to wrap here.
I think that's it.
So this is part one of a bigger conversation that we should definitely dive.
The thing is we're barely going to see Will, so who knows when we're going to be
there. I know.
Exactly. Hey. Except that we are doing a show together called I Hear Voices.
Amazing.
Guys, tune in. It's going to be a blast. Where can everybody find you? Nowhere.
That's right. Check out my social media nowhere.
You're on Cameo, though.
I'm on Cameo.
He's on Cameo.
But you know what they're actually saying about me on the internet? I don't.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Will, thanks for coming.
Thank you, everybody.
Vulnerable is hosted by me, Christy Carlson Romano, produced by Elizabeth Joy Windham, and executive produced by Brendan Rooney. Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham, and our video editor is Eduardo Gamba. Follow Vulnerable wherever you listen to podcasts, so you can join me every week for a vulnerable conversation. And be sure to follow Vulnerable on Instagram and TikTok at The Vulnerable Podcast. And make sure to tune in to my YouTube to watch the video version. And join me on my Patreon for exclusive content.